Welcome to the Feudal Anime Podcast. I'm Jack, and joining me today is Rick. How are you doing today, Rick?
I can't complain too much. It's nice and sunny outside. It's a fairly warm day for this fall weather. I'm really liking it. What about you?
I'm not doing too bad myself. It's actually pretty nice out today for a change. Can't complain. It's not blistering hot anymore. It's means it's finally nice and cool outside, and I can venture out into the world. Today we're going to talk about the anime Ergo Proxy, and it's going to be more along the lines of a general discussion. This is not going to be a review, although you can view it that way. We're just going to give our unfeathered, unbiased opinions about it, and spoiler warning to anyone who has not seen it. So we are going to talk about the story in general, including the ending, and just kind of hopefully have a nice, wonderful discussion about it.
This is, before we start, I got to preface this with, it is genuinely one of the most confusing anime that I would say I've ever watched. And I say that not because the storyline isn't straightforward, because if you do a real quick overview, you go from point A to point B to point C, but the way the direction of the anime goes, you can interpret this four or five different ways. And I had to watch it personally in its entirety, maybe three times, just so I can wrap my brain on what's going on. And the last episode by itself, Deus Ex Machina, I had to watch like four or five extra times just so that I can piece it apart, because it's one of those ones that just confuses you. But we'll get to that.
Right. To be fair, this is an anime that is definitely heavy on the psychological portion of it. It's very dark. It's very gritty. It's very goth-like. And it is one you have to pay attention to. You can't jump in halfway through the anime and go, I know exactly what's going on. It's something you have to watch from beginning to end to even try to understand what's going on.
I was gonna say, I watched the thing all the way through and I was still going, what the heck's going on?
So, yeah, it does take a lot to understand. I mean, like, you have to concentrate on it. You can't be distracted. It can't be anything that you're just watching in passing at all. You'd have to pay attention to truly understand it. And what's interesting about this anime is that it's actually not based on a manga at all. It was strictly created for pay-per-view, so to speak. So there's no other media to really read. There's no books, no novels, comics, nothing. It was completely created, so to speak.
You know, that makes a lot more sense now that you say that, because at times the flow was not what I would consider to be forward moving. Like, for instance, there was one anime, I know I'm jumping, but not anime, there's one episode in here where the entire show was basically waiting.
Yeah.
Like, I realize if you take a step back and you're not just watching the show to be entertained, you're watching the show to think, you can see that there's a psychological breakdown of what's happening, and you see minor character building, and you can see people start to break down their own prejudices in the whole thing. But it's still just, it didn't feel like it should have been one full episode. I feel like it should have been incrementally throughout the series, but it felt like they were like, oh shoot, we forgot to do something. We need to hurriedly solve this issue. And so what they end up doing is dedicate one episode to no action, no further movement of the plot, but just to show that the main protagonist and the main are starting to get a kind of understanding of one another, and if not necessarily respect, just to cohabitate without being aggressive all the time.
Right, right. And I'd argue for that question, or not question, but rather for that episode, is that I feel it was important to give you more into the psyche of one of the main characters. And I say one of the main characters because arguably there are more than one. At the very least, three. And the one for that episode was Riel. And it really delved into her psyche at the episode. It also had a pretty unique moment that she was staring at the guy she's traveling with, one of the other ones, Vince, and he has this whisker, and they've been stuck there obviously for a very long time. There hasn't been any wind or anything like that. She's staring at him while he's shaving, and he's getting embarrassed by it, but all she's saying is, "Shave it off, shave 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 it off. For the love of God, shave it off."
Yep. And, you know, there was a time in the anime, maybe seven, 8 minutes prior to her doing that. You could see from her point of view, she looks at him, and I couldn't for the life of me figure out what was wrong with the picture. I just knew that there was something wrong with it. And turns out, yeah, I rewound it, and yeah, it was that one really long whisker just off the side of his cheek that just was standing out. And she finally gets so fed up that she reaches out, pulls him forward. Now, in his mind, he's, "Why is she looking at me?" He feels a love for her, an obsession almost. And he thinks, "Oh God, I'm going to get a kiss." And she just yanks out the hair, and she goes, "Finally," throws it away, and they go back to doing what they were doing.
Right.
We should probably take a step back and detail who the main characters really are. You've got Vincent Law, who is an immigrant from, what's that name? Mosque? Something like that?
Yes. Yeah. He is from Moscow. M-O-S-K-O. Right, and the area they are in, they're in Remoto. All right, so very unique, very unique names there. Right, very original. Moscow.
I don't want
Remoto.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I do want to correct you. It's Romdo.
Oh,
they said that like 19-20 times, and it was so annoying because only one person called it Ramana, or the way that you just said it.
Right. And for whatever reason, that's the version that stuck in my head. So yeah, Romdo is it. Very original. So Moscow and Romdo. To put it all in perspective, let's jump back to the very beginning in the regard. So Romdo is a domed city, and so was Moscow, but you don't really know too much about the world. Romdo is one of the last civilizations on Earth because a global catastrophic event happened that basically blocked out the sun. So the world is pretty much dead. It's cold. The air is not the best in general, because of the environment, there's no trees outside, really. People that if you do go out there, you will end up dying from exposure to the elements. There isn't civilization. There's no wildlife. You're just out there.
Okay, so it sounds a lot like it's post-apocalyptic.
Correct.
Where we killed off all the trees. There's not enough oxygen to survive. That kind of thing. And yeah, it does look that way. It does look like we overworked what the Earth can do. And since it's set in the future, it would make sense that this is a possible eventuality where you get rid of all of the forests, you get all of the trees, all the things that are generating oxygen for us to consume, for us to breathe. And then life is stuck in these domes. Now, it does sound like there is more than one dome. You said Moscow, it was one.
Right.
Now, so, that something happened to that that dome, if you will, that they migrated to become an immigrant into Romdo. Now, do you know how many? I was told that they made, well, that's getting ahead of ourselves. I was told that there were obviously more than 7 or 8 different domes, if you will. And people were thriving and they had life between one another. But I don't know if there was war or if this was the last one that survived.
No, it by far is. It's not the last one that survived by any stretch of the imagination. It's more so along the lines of so, and you'll find this out three quarters into the anime. You find out that there are 300 specific beings called proxies made. And you can figure that, I don't know, maybe 1-2, right, per civilization. So you can assume that there are approximately globally, there are 150 to 300 domed cities that are still out there. Now, arguably, what's really going on is a majority of the cities are actually no longer there because of wars or because they just couldn't sustain themselves any longer or a variety of other reasons that are out there that could have been. So with that being said, life in and of itself in these cities actually seem to be pretty good. You know, you have these androids or auto Reeve, as they like to call them, that are there to help you out with your daily life. And one of the main characters, Riel, that is what she has following her around, especially in the beginning. And his name, the name of this android or what it's called, is Iggy, which I don't know why you would name it Iggy, but okay.
Now, if I remember correctly, that each citizen, as Riel is, you have citizens and then you have immigrants. Immigrants obviously are immigrating from other domes. So that would lead me to believe there are multiple domes and there's commerce between each dome. But going back to it, Iggy is something called an entourage, and each citizen, each proper citizen of the dome is given their own kind of a robot butler, if you will. And I've also noticed that one other main character is, I believe the name is Pino. Is that correct?
The other main character, Pino? Yes. The little, okay, little robot girl, the little android.
The little android that is originally a substitute for a child. From what I understand, human population is very strictly controlled because you can't have too many people, otherwise the food supply or other necessary things for life run out. And so it's a very, very strict balance. It's also why the citizens consider themselves better than the, well, I guess, migrants.
Actually, if I may, in general, there is no live birth. Like, no one gives birth.
Oh, God. Does that mean no one has sex?
They probably do. They're just probably genetically modified to where they can't give birth. And this is shown a few episodes in, like about five or six episodes in, where Riel goes into the womb area, rather, and she sees these machines that are all set up to give birth to humans. And it allows them to genetically modify and correct any potential birth defects and things like that, and also possibly remove the ability for them to be able to give birth and get pregnant.
Yeah, I can understand
that. It's a main point, and they point this out in a couple different areas as well. Like, she points it out in a couple different spots along their journey as the anime continues on, what this room looks like, or rather what a couple other people point out.
Now, I think this is something that they keep referring to I could be wrong. I could be very wrong. But I think this is what they refer to as the cradle of life, where these domes have their birthing centers. Now, every time they, once they left the dome and, or kicked out, however you'd like to put it, once they go to these other domes that have been destroyed in some fashion or another, the cradle of life, the birthing area, is usually all that they're able to locate. That's all that's really able to be found, or at least recognized.
Right, because of its unique design and look in general.
Correct. Now, that does lead me to this question. Once you watch the entire anime, you find that these proxies, that of which Vincent Law is a proxy, or at least he is the despair of a proxy.
His creator refers to him as a shadow. He actually reveals himself when he encounters another proxy, or not reveals himself, but discovers that he is the proxy called Ergo Proxy. The proxy of death. So he is a proxy. Now they can take on human form, but they each have their own special, unique identity, their own way to fight, their own traits, everything like that. Like the proxies are all individual; they're all unique, and you're really introduced to them about 2 or 3 episodes in. And when they talk about it, and Riel is attacked by one in the beginning, and you find out later on that it was Vince, or Ergo Proxy, that did attack her, or not really attack her, but more so defend her. I should say.
Was it really an attack? Because it makes me think, is the Monad Proxy, the one that Proxy 1 is in love with,
AKA Ergo Proxy. Let's clarify that. Yeah, Ergo Proxy is Proxy 1. Monad is the 13th proxy.
And they form a pair of some kind.
Right.
So I apologize. I should have clarified that sooner. That said, Riel appears to be a DNA relative to Monad. Proxy number 13.
Actually... he did was he create the one of the doctors there, or rather the head doctor, Daedalus, he took some of her DNA, some of Monad's DNA, and combined it to create Riel. Right, so Riel is spelled R-E-L with a capital L. And then what he created, because apparently because Riel left, went off, infatuated with the Ergo Proxy, or proxies in general, infatuated with Vince, trying to discover everything that's going on, has no time for Daedalus. He creates someone and names her Riel with a R-E-A-L instead of the hyphen. And with the combined DNA, because he wants her to only look at him. Now, that doesn't happen until much later on in the anime. In general, that doesn't happen until about three quarters of the way through. Now, what ends up happening most of the time, or not most of the time, what happens in the beginning is these androids are getting a virus called a Cogito virus, and basically how the robot, or how they describe it, is it basically gives the androids a soul, so to speak, and they become,
it gives them free will,
right? They refer to it as them giving us or taking a soul. And it's not so much that they all have free will, because most of the time they end up dropping to their knees, looking up at the sky and praying, and that's how you're introduced to this virus. Now, what's interesting is some of them keep the keep their original programming, their original directive, like Iggy being the entourage for Riel and guarding and protecting her, looking after her, taking care of her, you know, doing what she can, he can, or it can, for her. And he takes it to a lethal point to where he only wants her to look at him. And so he locks her up. He takes her, captures her, locks her up. And then he's like, I'm going to go kill this person because she needs to focus on me. She only needs to look at me.
Yeah. And this is why I think, stepping back from the story, this is why I think there was multiple directors, if you will, looking at this and going, this should happen and this should happen, because there are many different plot lines that could have eventually had a story by themselves going on. And it, in my opinion, disrupts the flow, which is why I feel it's a little bit difficult to watch. But going back and diving back into it, he falls in the category of, I want someone to love me, but because you won't love me, I'm going to try to force somebody else to. And when that fails, I'm going to descend into madness to the point of, if I can't have you, no one can.
Right.
But the trade-off here is he's not physically overbearing. He's not even mentally overbearing. He's just simply an extra that no one really cares about until you realize, oh crap, what are you doing? When he dies, feeling neither happy or sad about it. It's just a background character who had a foreground name, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
someone who doesn't matter to the story, but is well known enough that them dying should have some significance that no one really sees. Mm-hmm. The only thing I could say is when he does die, he is like, I still love you. You were always my favorite, Riel. Run through here, go find the one. And she doesn't even pause to reflect on his feelings. She's like, wow, this is really sad. Deuces, I'm out. So I don't know if that just goes to show her focus on Vincent Law as her main goal, or if it just shows her as someone who is, for lack of a better term, heartless.
Right.
So I'm not that, in my mind, that just makes it to where any relatability she once had was thrown out the window.
What's interesting though about the Cogito virus is, how is it transmitted? Like through NFC?
I thought about that, but probably not, because it's not spreading as quickly. It looks like it could be a physical thing. It could be a sound or a sight of some kind, because if you'll notice, Pino always says that she could hear Vincent, and she refers to the other proxies as the other Vincent. And she says that, oh, I can see him. He's impossibly far away, but he's shining like the sun. So maybe the proxies themselves give off a frequency or give off some extra thing that, I don't know, that these robots are able to see. But it could be a specific frequency they give off that you're able to capture and manipulate. Because there were some assassins that were infected on purpose with the Cogito virus.
Right, right. But I would argue that the reason why she says the other Vincent, and she says that a couple different times, is because there were other people masquerading as him, trying to pretend to be him, so to speak. And
true.
So that's more along the lines of why she brings that up, why she references it.
I did notice that, but there was also one specific time when she said, you're not the Vincent I know. And she was referring to a female proxy that was not attempting to mimic the Vincent's look. I believe it was the first proxy that he actually killed.
this goes back to me saying that they're that the proxies are all unique and special in their nature, and that why I believe there's only roughly 150 domed cities, one male, one female, each one created specifically for a domed city.
True. And then we do find out that there was a elimination proxy project. That's why Ergo One is the proxy. Sorry, Proxy One is the proxy of death. He's there to kill all the other proxies. Now,
right. They also, when you run across another proxy a little bit later on down the line, during the Smile Land episode, the proxy there actually tells Pino, please don't have him come to my city, because when two proxies from opposing areas come in contact with each other, we have to fight to the death.
Okay.
And so he turns away, or Pino convinces Vincent to not go to that city. Right. So, but that's jumping ahead, way ahead, from where we're at, just in the beginning. So they haven't, they barely leave the city. And so, Vincent leaves the city is because he's actually being attacked by Monad, and he doesn't realize he's the proxy yet too. In the beginning, just a couple, three episodes in, he's being attacked by Monad.
And you see him switch. You see him change. You see, now the change you do see is his eyes open up, and it goes from a "no, don't hurt me" to "no nonsense, I'ma F you up."
Right.
And he doesn't remember it at all. It's like he's compartmentalizing the memories of his mind and whatnot. And he's essentially forced out, ironically enough, by Rial.
Right.
And that's when you find out the outside world, outside the dome, there's people. There are people around. Now, the environment is toxic, and by design or by accident, they never really get into it. But apparently there is a known vaccine for this sickness. Now, that's curious to me, because if there is a known cure to the virus, why are they always keeping everybody inside? And why does everybody who goes outside, why are they treated like criminals?
Probably because they don't have enough vaccines in general to keep everyone alive or to give it to everyone. So it's infinite.
I actually just thought of something. You mentioned that the people born in the cradle of life, might not be right, but let's assume it is. People born in the cradle of life can't have kids or might not be able to. The chick that lives outside the dome had a son. Of the group of people that you meet a child.
Right. Which means she probably was ejected from the city with the son, because there's no one there that she would have sex with. Like, let's be realistic.
Well, you have a point, but it leads to the potential that maybe only in the domes they're not allowed to have kids. They're not allowed to conceive, if that makes any sense. Only because what happens when the domes are gone? And the proxies obviously know the time is nigh, so to speak, if you want to get biblical, that the human race is going to have to work on its own.
Right.
Not everybody is against the humans. Not every proxy is against the humans. There are some that still see it as their duty to rebuild the population, and while others, they feel like a shunned creator. They've done all this work, and yet nobody's willing to using them as a power source.
Right. And some of them are pretty well versed, or not versed, but pretty well respected within their areas, and they live amongst them in a very positive way. Now, what's interesting is are the proxies gave the humans all the technology, the technology for the womb systems, for the auto Reeves, for the all the technology, for the domes, everything, given all to them, and And so it's like, why would you give it all to them? And then, you know, for in Ergo Proxy's case, disappear or pretend to disappear.
But did he disappear? Remember, now this is part that's confusing to me. At the very end, in the very last episode, there are two Ergo Proxies. There are two Proxy Ones.
Right, and it's and because they both recognize each other. Right. Well, he created him. He created the one, the Vince Law. He created him, wiped his memory, destroyed any ability for him to be able to get memories about everything that went on. Like he, Vincent Law was actually created by Ergo Proxy, and he even says that when he finally meets him at the end, he says, "Look, I created you. You are a shadow of me. So I can kill you on a whim. You're not even real. Like, you're only here because I decided to do it on a whim." And Riel's grandfather, who's the leader standing in place of Ergo Proxy, even though he's still there the whole time, he goes on to say, "You know, I'm just going to disappear. I'm going to go about my life." Or not go about my life, but you know, I'm going to disappear.
Go about my death.
Yeah. And he disappears, right? And so Vince is in Moscow. And then because of whatever events transpire, Riel's grandfather decides, well, he wants to get a proxy back into the area, back into that city. And so they bomb Moscow, go over, invade it, take a proxy, bring it back, and then Vincent, who's there because he's an immigrant, ends up leaving the city. And this is what's interesting. This is something that I find interesting, is that the proxies actually can dictate whether or not the womb system, or the cradle of life, as you put it, works and is active.
So I do have a question. If Mosk was bombed for their proxy, what proxy was actually there? Was it Ergo Proxy or was it Monad Proxy that was in
it was
that was in Mosk?
It was, I would say it was probably Monad.
So they brought Monad from one to the other, and then Monad mm-hmm. decides to kill Ergo Proxy's substitute, let's call him Vincent right. Law.
Right, because like the Smile End episode, the proxy for that area said, when two proxies come in contact with each other, they must fight to the death.
Now, does that lend to your hypothesis of 150, or does that lend to your hypothesis of 300 domes?
Well, the reason why I say 150 is because it's one male, one female for every dome. And what lends to this is when they're on their way, or when Vincent is on his way to Moscow, he comes across a very, very, very much war-torn area where the Autoreivs are fighting against the humans. And the humans are like, "Let's try and keep the womb system going. We just need to keep it here." And the proxies that are there, they don't care, right? But they're sending the Autoreivs out to kill the humans for whatever reason. And he even says to Vince, who killed the female proxy there, he goes, "You killed the person that was my partner. You killed the one that was supposed to be there with me."
Okay.
So I don't know if that's a unique situation, unique scenario, because he also had two towers, whereas of most or the other domes only had one, and all we can ever find out is one. So that could be a unique scenario.
Okay, I can accept that.
So that's why I gave. It's like anywhere from 150 to 300. It could be anywhere in point in between. I mean, like, hell, there could have been only $299. And for whatever reason, that one was special and had two, but they're both dead now, along with all the humans. So.
They're both dead. Never know.
Never know. But yeah, no, the proxies, each one looks like have their own special ability too. And, you know, in all honesty, each of the domed areas that we end up coming to are very different from each other, like in terms of what's going on, how everything's happening. It's kind of reminiscent to me of the Fallout series, the games.
Okay.
Simply because you have a post-apocalyptic world. Everyone's inside a vault or a domed city in this case. Each one serves its own purpose, and it seems like every single one serves its own purpose, basically to the whim, though, of the proxies. And what's another interesting thing is that when you come across in the series, they come across a area where it looks like everyone was in a cave, and they're all having been mutated from the gas. They're actually able to give live birth, but it doesn't look like there's a proxy there.
Now, earlier you found a proxy in a cave who was just monstrous. Yeah, he was just a monstrosity. He was monstrous, and that's when you find out that the bullets that the no-name doctor, I forget what his name is, starts with a D. Main character who dies. We talked about him before, but he was so non-existent. Deldis. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just going to call him the no-name doctor because he's not really relevant for real anything
right
in the series. But he gives Rial bullets to kill Vincent Law because everyone was thinking, hey, if he's a proxy, this should kill him. And right. That's when you find out that these bullets actually work against proxies. Now, you had a very interesting thought on what these bullets were, because they don't damage humans, but they kill proxies. A grazing of this thing, a mere flesh wound that's not mortal in a lethal area can still just disrupt the DNA of any proxy. Right. So what did you think it was again?
UV. UV, so basically kind of like the proxies are a little bit like vampires. I mean, like, we're in a world, they're dark-skinned, though, but the world is completely covered in clouds. It's cold, it's desolate, there is no sunlight that penetrates through, so, I mean, and from how it looks in the animation, it looks like it could be a UV bullet. I mean, they basically are super powerful, super fast. They don't age. They are immortal, or thought to be immortal, and only a proxy can kill another proxy, or at least that was the initial thought process behind it.
And that's what in the last episode, that's what Ergo Proxy says, or Proxy One. He says, I'm supposed to be immortal, and yet you killed me.
Right.
So that leads to that.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, he even talks about at the end too, that it was never meant to be permanent. Like they were meant to guide civilization into the new age till the world was ready and be able to fix the world or have it so that they can fix the world. And obviously no one ever did that. They just lived in the Dome Cities for however long. But another thing that is really interesting is, again, at the end, to bring it up, is that they die by sunlight, too, which is why I thought they might be UV bullets. I mean, they get exposed to the sun. You see Monad, who gets reincarnated, fly up into the sky and burn up from sunlight because the clouds are starting to finally part. And you see Ergo Proxy sit there with sun starting to hit him and the light just starts burning him.
You know, you have a point. Okay. okay, bringing that scene back up in my mind, he was disintegrating wherever the sun did touch him. See, I always was under the impression that when he was run through by Vincent, that part of the dying process, part of the decaying process, was simply just dissolving. But going back to the very, very first monster that was killed by the bullet, he didn't go away. He just died.
Right.
And then Monad, the original Vincent had killed, died as well.
Mm-hmm.
But see, here's the chink in the armor. Here's the chink in here's the soft spot in the argument.
Run across the other bodies as well. So they had like three or four bodies total.
Yeah, they did. But here's where my my inconsistency meter, let's call it, goes sky high. When Vincent kills the female proxy, he doesn't run her through. He doesn't tear her apart. His eyes glow, and then the eyes do something that resemble lightning and basically pour into this other proxy until that proxy's dead.
Right.
And is it possible, because that blue light coming from his eyeballs glows whenever he's mad, other proxies are upset, and you see them attack with it as well. Is it possible that the sunlight, the UV rays, I guess, are somehow inherent inside of them, and that's how they're able to kill each other? Is that something that you'd be willing to accept? Does that sound rational?
Yeah, you know, it definitely sounds unique. I mean, like, it definitely makes you wonder what it is. I mean, like, it takes electricity to make those bullets. So, but the proxies aren't exactly robot, because ergo proxy, he rips off his arm because he gets shot in the arm by one of those bullets, and his arm grows back. You can see the muscle tissue just pop out and grow back.
Yeah. And it's the inconsistency that kills me on this, because the very first time she shoots this bullet, it hits the other guy in the forearm, right? Or what? No. Wait, was it the chest?
It hits him in the chest.
Never mind.
So I don't know. It's definitely unique in the nature. So maybe not UV bullets. Maybe electrical shock bullets, you know, special electrical bullets that short out their system in a very, very specific way.
Okay.
But if that's the case, then basically anyone shot with it will die. So.
Yeah, and they were very specific that the bullets would not hurt people. Now the cells, the Amorite cells, I think they called them. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was the Amorite cells. Mm-hmm. They died when they were exposed to this blue light. Now, right. If the blue light's coming out of Odude's eyes, and he is the proxy of death, and all these other proxies, when they came in contact with it, they didn't immediately kill each other, yet he's going out there, and his specific proxy, he's the proxy of death, whereas the other man that you see, blonde hair, blue-eyed, but not like glowing blue yet, and talking on a very cordial note with Vincent, before Vincent realizes he's the proxy of death, he goes, "I am so-and-so, proxy of light. Anything I shine on, blah, 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 blah," and that's his spiel. Maybe there's something in Vincent specifically that is meant to destroy the other proxies, which is why they did say that this was the end of the proxies, the proxy extermination project, or I think that's what they called it, annihilation.
Yeah.
He's pivotal to that because it's his job to go and kill everybody. Like it's so maybe in the Smile City, the proxy wasn't saying that whenever a proxy meets another proxy, it's whenever Vincent meets another proxy. Does that make sense?
I'll take that. Yeah, no, that makes more sense. Definitely in the regard that it's like, yeah, if someone comes in contact with Vince specifically, yeah, they have to fight to the death for whatever reason. Because he is the proxy of death. They don't really talk about, though, too much about the other civilizations out there. Some of the proxies do go mad, and one of the civilizations that comes across is the proxy killed all the humans that were there.
That's more common in this world than you'd think. You know, they're like, I can't be loved, therefore no one can. Or they're just going to leave me, so before they do, I'm going to make it to where they can't.
Right.
Or, like, I think I know the one you're talking about. The one you're talking about is where the proxy basically drowned everyone.
Yep.
And, oh, okay, this is just one more thing to validate my hypothesis. The proxy couldn't kill themselves. They killed everybody, but they couldn't die on their own because they're immortal. They needed Vincent to come and kill them, essentially.
Right, but honestly, if you were immortal, would you have an easy time killing yourself?
Of course not, which is why Vincent is such a lifesaver.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Or the reverse.
Well, you know, I mean, also, it's noted that basically, the proxies can venture outside. They're not restricted in the same way humans are. They can definitely get by without having to have any vaccines or anything like that at all. In that regard,
they are immortal.
Yeah.
So they should be impervious to any illness.
Right. So what's to stop the one that ended up killing everyone because he was upset that he's alone? What's to stop him from venturing out and going into another city or to another dome to find someone to love?
They might be landlocked. That's the thought that just came across my mind.
But Monad, which was taken from Mosco and then Vincent, they're not landlocked. And it certainly doesn't look like that, especially with the big guy that they ran across either.
I think the big guy was actually part of a dead dome. Because every episode you'll see, minus the one where they're yelling at the wind, they're in a dome that has been destroyed.
Fair enough.
And I don't know. It still goes to question, why did Vincent Law get sick when he left the dome? Like, he was legitimately ill, according to everyone around him, almost dead.
I don't know. I don't know. Overall, I think that the story overall was good. But it left a lot of plot holes, left a lot to be desired. Each of the main characters, Riel, Vince, mainly, you can have entire series on each one of them. But they didn't go into enough detail, and they left a lot unanswered. I mean, like, I get that they were trying to get a lot out there, that they were trying to explain a lot, but a lot really wasn't explained. And if it was, it was not explained well at all.
See, I can appreciate that viewpoint. I'm going to have to differ with you on this one, but not completely. I feel that a great deal of detail and effort went into the visuals and the sound. The sound alone, the soundtrack to this whole anime, honestly, one of the best I think I've ever come in contact with. That said, I feel they put too much. The opening score, if you will, the opening sequence of their... I don't even know what you call it. The opening scene? The opening...
opening credits.
What do you call it? Just opening credits, sure. Okay. That they play a song, Come and Save Me. It was at the beginning ironic and at the end poetic. meaning it's the same song, but when you watch it in the beginning, you're like, oh, okay, I guess. At the very end, you're like, okay, that song is awesome. It evolves more, in my opinion, in your understanding of it than the actual anime does. Right. And when you look at just the opening credit, the detail in how many different, I would say, images are thrown at you in that course of a minute and a half. And it's repetitive. Like every episode comes with this consistent stream of just religious, not necessarily paraphernalia, but religious undertones. And you see barbed wire that you could mistake as the thorns of Christ's crown. You have the necklace that could be a very, very distorted cross.
Right.
You have there was a few stills that I saw where there was just different languages thrown up there saying the same thing. It was awesome. There's scripture laced throughout. If they put that much effort in not the production, but if they put that much effort and that much detail into the rest of the anime, it would be top tier. One of the best.
But they didn't. I mean,
very true.
They didn't. The opening credits, the opening was great. It's wonderful. I mean, like hell, it honestly, it also felt very 90s to me, even though it came out in 2006. It was very 90-esque in the opening for it.
Yeah. See, it's funny you mention that. I felt that it was riding the coattails of the success of Ghost in the Shell. But Ghost in the Shell wasn't made in the 2000s, was it?
No. I don't believe it was. For me, though, it actually felt very, I want to say very Witch Hunter Robin. It was very, because when Witch Hunter Robin in so many ways is like Ergo Proxy. In that regard, it's psychological, it's goth, it's something you have to watch, and it really makes you think. The style in animation is identical almost in that regard. So it was, but in general, I mean, it was a great show. It was good. Certainly personally, I think it's worth, you know, borrowing it or renting it, you know,
I can see that. So it's one of those things that if you're going to watch it, you're going to need to devote at least two run throughs for it. It's like Sixth Sense, if you will. You watch it one time and you're like, okay, that was weird. And then the minor twist at the end makes you want to watch it all over again with new eyes, essentially. And everything that you see as important becomes iffy. And some things that weren't even a little bit on the Richter scale of being a blurp becomes, oh, wow. For instance, the guy who wants to kill Vincent Law for majority of the time that you're watching, his daughter is Pino.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't even register until the very end. And you're like, what? Wait, why wasn't this a bigger plot point?
Well, it's meant to be underlying, right? It's meant to be an underlying tone through the whole thing and the irony behind it all, too. So
yeah, there are definitely levels to this anime that you don't really find in the more popular anime. And I hate to do it, but I'm going to have to go back to Ghost in the Shell. Ghost in the Shell looks like this feels, if that makes any sense.
Like, right.
I don't know if the director had influence on Ghost in the Shell or was influenced by it, but I feel like it should have been relatively close. If not in timeline, but in feeling. And you are right. This was in the mid 2000s. And I did look it up while we were talking. Ghost in the Shell was mid 90s. So there's a 10-year difference, but you could easily watch these side by side and feel the same vibe going on, mm-hmm. feel the exact same confusion
right.
about what's going on. And then the clarity at the end with the open-endedness that most Japanese old animation is well known for.
I do agree. It wasn't exactly a happy ending. At least in my opinion, it just left you kind of wondering what was going to come next. What's going to happen next?
Yeah. And it's kind of awkward because I see where you're coming from, and it's hard to put into words. You don't want a sequel because it's good as it is, and adding more onto it would just make you feel kind of blah, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's just like a little epilogue. A 15-minute epilogue would be awesome. And it would be like, hey, here's what they did. And, you know, I don't necessarily mean 5 years down the road. I'd be like, hey, they lived happily ever after. Or, you know, hey, they died 5 minutes after leaving the compound, essentially. Just something that we can go off of other than, well, that was uninspiring.
Yeah.
To give you an idea, that there's a very beautiful, perfect example that I would say a lot of people either felt or thought when they saw the ending of Full Metal Alchemist, not the Brotherhood version, but Full Metal Alchemist, when you're like, well, what happened? And then to solve that, they actually released a full-length motion picture about what happened to Alphonse and the Elric brothers. And they Americanized it afterwards, which I really wasn't too thrilled about. Everybody had a happy ending. I was grateful that I was able to have a conclusion. I feel like once you open something, you need to close it. You know, you need to have book endings. You need to have, you know, and this felt like it didn't have a proper book ending.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it didn't even feel, to me personally, it didn't even feel like it had a chapter ending. It felt like mid chapter, the guy was like, okay, yeah, that's good.
Yeah. I think in general, maybe in the future, if someone, writes the guy in a threatening letter, maybe.
You wouldn't want to write a guy a threatening letter who's got an imagination like that.
Yeah, no kidding. Probably turn that into an anime.
Yeah, it'd be like the letter writer, .. who never was.
Yeah, no kidding. I think it's about time to wrap things up. How would you recommend this? Like, how would you recommend it?
Well, to give you an appropriate rating that I would understand, I'm gonna have to give you a table of contents, if you will. I typically have would I own it? Would I guilt someone else into watching it, kind of thing? Would I not? Do I regret watching it? That kind of thing. As far as this one goes, I would probably, like, if you had it, I'd borrow it from you and then return it after like the second or third watch, but I wouldn't want to own it.
Right.
If you didn't have it, I'd probably try to rent it from Redbox or somewhere like that, or Netflix something. I'd find out someone who had it for much less than the purchasing price. Yeah. So I would say rent or buy.
Yeah.
No, sorry, not rent or buy. Ha! Oops. Rent or borrow. That'd be my rating.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. If I had to spend money on it, I'd rent it. But if I didn't have to spend money on it, if I could like borrow it from someone or maybe find it somewhere to watch it. Otherwise, don't go out and buy it. Certainly, if you have it, don't guilt someone into watching it with you, because
unless you like torture,
indeed, it is definitely psychological. It's very goth, very something you'll probably end up watching 2-3 times just to fully understand because of everything of how intricate it is. Just in general.
I would say if you liked Ghost in the Shell, you'd love the animation. If you liked Death Note, you can appreciate the storyline.
Yes.
I'm not trying to compare Death Note to this one because Death Note, in my opinion, is far superior. However, if you like psychological thrillers like that, that force you to think, that force you to be extra critical, this is the anime I'd recommend.
Right, right.
And as far as next week goes, we were thinking I could choose. And my pick to discuss is Aaron Logan. I said that wrong. I said that very wrong. I said that so wrong. Give me a moment, sir.
Oh, God.
You're a dick. Crap. How do you say it?
Do you mean Gurren Lagann?
Yes, that's... Yeah.
Okay, so next week, join us as we talk about Gurren Lagann.